have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Oh, how we danced on the night we were wed. We vowed our true love, though a word wasn't said. The world was in bloom, there were stars in the skies, except for the few that were there in your eyes. Even as I held you close in my arms, angels were singing a hymn to your charms, your heart gently beating, murmuring low, darling, I love you so. The night seemed to fade into blossoming dawn. The sun shone anew, but the dance lingered on. Could we but recall that sweet moment sublime, we find that our love is unaltered by time. Blossoming dawn, the sun shone in you, but the dance lingered on. Could we but recall that sweet moment sublime, we'd find that our love is unaltered by time.
This is Bruce Kaplan welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. I hope you're all having a fantastic weekend. Television didn't arrive on the scene in Seattle until Thanksgiving Day, 1948. Until that time, you had the motion pictures that you go to the theaters, or you could listen to the movies on the radio. One of the best movies ever made recently was brought out was Double Indemnity with Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck from 1944. Tonight, we have a real treat for you. We're going to listen to a half-hour adaptation of that great movie starring the original stars of Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck. Then we're going to listen to another radio movie starring the great redhead Lucille Ball. These adaptations, some people say, were as good as the movies themselves. If you have any questions for me, please don't hesitate to write to Bruce at radiomasterpieces.com. Also, I would sure love to hear what you would like to hear on the radio. We always scour the archives from the early 1940s to the beginning of the 1950s to bring you the best of the best of the masterpieces of yesterday. Again, thank you so much for tuning in, and now let's enjoy our wonderful shows.
Double Indemnity, from the novel by James M. Cain. It stars Barbara Stanwyck as Phyllis, Fred McMurray as Walter, and Walter Abel as Keyes. It's midnight. Downtown Los Angeles is dark and deserted. But high above the quiet street, one window shows a splash of light. Walter Neff, star agent for Pacific All Risk Insurance, is in his private office typing a report.
Office memorandum to Barton Keyes, claims manager. July 16th, 1938. Dear Keyes, well, you old buzzard, you did it again. I mean, you were right on that Dietrichson claim. Accident and double indemnity. You said it wasn't an accident. Check. You said it wasn't suicide. Check. You said it was murder. Check and double check.
He pauses, fumbles for a cigarette with his right hand. Now we see that the other hand hangs limp and useless at his side. And spreading from below his shoulder, a dark red stain discolors his shirt. He takes a long drag on the cigarette, brushes it out, and then goes on.
I'll admit it, Keyes. You can always smell a phony claim. And you were pretty good on this one for a while. Only you made just one little mistake. You picked the wrong guy for the murder. And that's where I want to set you straight. I'm going to tell you who it was. It all started one afternoon about the end of May. I'd stopped at this house over on Los Feliz to check up on some auto renewals. The maid who answered the bell was kind of nasty, and as I was trying to talk my way in...
What is it, Nettie? Who's at the door?
That was her. That was the first time I ever saw her. She was up on a little balcony, standing there wrapped in a beach towel, showing plenty of curves. And I guess I must have goggled a bit because she sort of smiled. And then...
I'm Mrs. Dietrichson. What is it, please?
It's about the auto, the renewals on the automobiles, Mrs. Dietrichson. The insurance ran out on the 15th. I'd hate to think of you getting a smashed fender or something while you're not fully covered.
I think I know what you mean. I've just been taking a sunbath.
No airplanes around, I hope. Look, Mrs. Dietrichson, about these policies...
Would you mind going into the living room, please? I'll slip something on and be right down.
That was all, Keyes. Except the way she looked at me. Sort of giving me the come on, if you know what I mean. I know. Especially after she came downstairs.
I hurried, so I hope my face is on straight.
That's perfect for my money, Mrs. Dietrichson.
Won't you sit down, Mr.
Neff. Walter Neff. With the two Fs, like in Philadelphia. If you know the story.
What story?
The Philadelphia story. Let's see, what were we talking about?
Insurance.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you see, it's on both cars, Mr. Dietrichson. The policies are... Hey, that's a honey of an anklet you're wearing.
Maybe I ought to cover it so you can keep on talking about insurance.
Well, I've been trying to get in touch with your husband. He never seems to be at the office.
He's been very busy down at Long Beach in the oil fields.
Well, maybe I could catch him at home some evening.
I suppose so, but he's never home before 8.
Well, that's swell. I'll... Say, I wish you'd tell me what's engraved on that anklet.
Just my name.
As for instance?
Phyllis.
Phyllis, huh? I think I like that.
But you're not sure.
I'd have to drive around the block a couple of times.
Let's say tomorrow night at 8:30. He'll be in then.
Who?
My husband. Didn't you want to talk to him?
Oh, sure, but I'm kind of getting over it, if you know what I mean.
Mr. Neff, there's a speed limit in this state, 45 miles an hour.
How fast was I going, officer?
I'd say about 90.
Well, suppose you get down off your motorcycle and give me a ticket?
Suppose I let you off with a warning this time?
Suppose it doesn't take?
Suppose I have to whack you over the knuckles?
Suppose I bust out crying and put my head on your shoulder?
Suppose you try putting it on my husband's shoulder?
Well, that tears it. I'll drop in tomorrow night.
I'll see you to the door.
About 8:30? Will you be here, too?
I usually am.
Same chair, same perfume, same anklet?
I wonder if I know what you mean.
I wonder if you wonder. Maybe you can't understand that, Keyes. You've got an insurance policy where your heart ought to be. But I tell you, I couldn't wait to get back to see her again. And when she phoned the next morning and changed the appointment to the afternoon, I almost broke my neck getting over there. She met me at the door herself, explaining it was the maid's day off. Then she told me her husband couldn't make it either. So there we were, alone. Well, we sat around and had some light palaver, and pretty soon we were Phyllis and Walter. And then when she thought I'd taken the hook, sort of casual-like, she started pulling me in.
Walter, I'm a little worried about my husband.
Should I be, too?
Oh, silly. I mean, he's always down in those oil wells with the drilling crews. It's very dangerous.
Sure, but it's mighty profitable.
Why, only last week a crown block fella caught the foreman and broke his back.
Oh, that's bad.
Don't you think he should carry accident insurance?
The foreman?
No, my husband. What kind of a policy could he get?
Oh, say $125 a week cash benefit. Around $50,000 capital sum.
Oh, capital sum? What's that?
That's if he got killed. Oh, maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Oh, I suppose you have to think of everything. Walter, could I get an accident policy for him without bothering him about it?
How's that again?
Well, I have a little allowance of my own. I could pay the premium and not even tell him about it.
Why shouldn't you tell him?
Well, because I know he doesn't like accident insurance. He's superstitious.
A lot of people are. That's funny, isn't it?
Yes, if there was a way to get it like that, why, all my worries would be over. You see what I mean?
Sure, I've got good eyesight. He wouldn't know about the policy. And the insurance company wouldn't know that he doesn't know. Isn't that the setup?
Well, is there anything wrong with it?
No, I think it's lovely. And then if some dark night that crown block fell on
him... What crown block?
Of course, it doesn't have to be a crown block. A car can back over him or he can fall out of a window. Any little thing like that, just so it's a morgue job.
Are you crazy?
Not that crazy. Good afternoon.
Walter, what's the matter?
Look, baby, you can't get away with it.
Get away with what?
You want to knock him off, don't you, baby?
Oh, that's a horrible thing to say.
What did you take me for? A guy that walks up to a good-looking dame and says, "Hello, I sell accident insurance on husbands. You got one that's been around too long?" Not me, baby. I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out of here, but quick. That's the truth, Pease. I walked right out. She didn't fool me for a minute. No, and I didn't fool myself either. Back in my apartment that night, I knew I hadn't walked out on anything. She had the hook in me too strong. And when the doorbell rang a little later, I didn't have to guess. I knew who'd be there when I opened the door.
Hello. Don't you want me to come in?
Sure, why not? How'd you know where I live?
It's in the phone book.
How'd you get out? Your husband away?
He telephoned from Long Beach, said he wouldn't be home till late. You know, it's about time you said you're glad to see me.
I knew you wouldn't leave it like that.
Like what?
Like it was this afternoon.
Oh, Walter, you must have misunderstood. You must never think anything like that about me.
Okay.
No, it's not okay. Not if you don't believe me.
Well, what do you want me to do?
Be nice to me. Like the first time you came.
It can't be like the first time. Something's happened.
I know it has. It's happened to us. Maybe I oughtn't to have come.
Maybe you oughtn't.
You want me to go?
If you want to.
Right now?
Come here, baby. I wanted to do this from the minute I saw you.
Walter.
How are you going to do it, baby?
Do what?
Kill him.
Oh, Walter, for the last time. Why do you keep on saying that?
Come on, pull yourself together. Just stop thinking about it, baby. So we just sat there, and she kept on crying. Maybe after a while she forgot about it. Maybe she did. But me, I couldn't. I'm not trying to alibi myself, Keys. I fought it, only maybe I didn't fight it hard enough. And pretty soon I was in it so deep I didn't even hear her when she said...
I've got to go now, Walter. Will you call me? Walter!
Huh?
I hate him. I loathe going back to him. You believe me, don't you, Walter?
Sure, I believe you.
I can't stand it anymore. Sometimes I think it would be better to hang.
You're not going to hang, baby. Not ever.
Walter.
Because you're going to do it the smart way. Because I'm going to help you.
You?
Me.
Do you know what you're saying?
Sure, I know. We're going to do it together. And we're going to do it right.
Walter, my arm. You're hurting me.
Call me, but not from your house. From a booth. And watch your step every single minute. It's got to be perfect, you understand? Straight down the line.
Okay, Walter. Straight down the line.
The first step looked like the tough one, Keys. to get her husband's signature on an accident policy. But that turned out to be a cinch. He thought he was signing the auto renewals. And after that, everything seemed right in the groove. Phyllis told me he was going north at the end of the month to a college reunion. That suited me fine. There was a little clause in the policy, double indemnity for death by train. $100,000 instead of 50. And then, with only a week to go...
Walter, he had an accident at the well. He broke his leg. The trip is off.
And that's how it stood till a few days later. I guess you remember that afternoon, Keyes. You'd come into my office and you were kind of hot.
Can you imagine a stupid lunk like this Gorlopsis trying to put a fast one over on me?
I guess he didn't figure on your little man.
Yes, my little man, right here inside of me.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Walter, you can kid me about my little man, but he ties my stomach up in knots every time a phony claim comes in. Know what we found at Gorlopsis' place? Wood shavings, soaked in kerosene. So I hauled him in here and... Go ahead, take it. It's probably for you.
Well, why not? It's my phone. Hello, Walter Knapp speaking.
Walter, I had to call you. It's terribly urgent. Are you with somebody?
Yes, I am. Can't you call me back, Margie?
No, Walter, I've only got a minute. I can't wait. Listen, he's going tonight, on the train. Are you listening? Walter.
Sure, I'm listening, Margie.
He's on crutches. The doctor says he can go if he's careful. Oh, it's wonderful, Walter, just the way you wanted it. Only with crutches, it's ever so much better, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Hold the line a minute. Say, Keyes, suppose I join you in your office, huh?
I'll wait. Tell Margie not to take all day.
Hello, Margie. Go ahead.
It's the 10:15 from Glendale. I'm driving him to the station. Is it still that same dark street?
Yeah, sure, sure.
I'll leave the garage door open. You can hide in the back of the car. The signal is 3 honks on the horn. Is there anything else?
What color did you pick?
Color? Oh, yes. The blue suit, Walter. And the cast is on his left leg.
Yeah, I like that fine.
This is it, Walter. I'm shaking like a leaf, but it's just like you said. Straight down the line.
We're back in Walter Neff's office again. We can see the dark red stain on his shirt. It's larger now, and the pain lines cut deeper into his face. For a somber moment, he stares at the wall, then hunches over the typewriter again.
We killed him, Keyes. In the car on the way to the station, just the way we planned. I don't think he ever knew what hit him. We stopped at a place I had all picked out. We shoved him into the back of the car and tossed an automobile robe over him. Then I wrapped some stuff around my leg, made it look like I was wearing a cast. And that's how I got on the train, wearing that and a pair of crutches. Do you get it now, Keyes? Do you see how carefully I'd worked it out? Dietrichson's body was in the back of the car, and still he was getting on that train. Phyllis kissed me goodbye at the train and told the porter to make up my berth. I said I'd go back to the observation platform. And that's where I had the first hint of trouble. There was somebody out on the platform already. Name of Jackson, he told me. The type that always introduces himself. I had to think fast. We were moving now. I didn't have much time, so I started fumbling around in my pockets. And then he noticed it and grinned.
I bet you forgot something. You know, I always do.
Yeah, my cigar case. I must have left it in my topcoat back on the seat.
You care to roll yourself a cigarette, Mr.?
Dietrichson. Thanks, I really prefer cigars. Maybe if I could get the porter.
Oh, no need to bother. I could fetch your cigars for you. I'd be glad to.
Oh, that's very nice of you. It's car 11, section 4. Are you sure it's not too much trouble?
Don't mention it, Mr. Dietrichson. No trouble at all.
That gave me my chance to hop off the train. Luckily, it was just about the spot we'd picked, and Phyllis was waiting there in the car with all the lights off. We dragged the body out and dropped it on the tracks. The crutches, too. Then we got in the car and started the motor and got away from there fast. You'd better drop me off here. I'll walk the extra block back to my place, just in case.
All right.
Good night.
Walter.
Yeah?
Aren't you going to kiss me?
Okay.
It's straight down the line, isn't it? Isn't it? Walter, what's the matter?
Aren't you nervous at all?
No. Are you?
Yeah.
You mustn't be. I love you, Walter.
Yeah, I love you too, baby. You know what happened after that, Keyes. They found the body on the tracks. The autopsy showed a broken neck. They figured he'd fallen off the train. Even you, Keyes, you thought so too. And if we got by you, the worst was over. I was really beginning to feel relaxed, and then the following night...
Walter, I had to come. I had to see you.
You're sure nobody noticed you?
I'm sure. I looked all around first at... Walter.
Get in the bedroom. Don't make any noise. All right, just a minute. Hello, Walter. Hello, Keyes. What's on your mind?
Say, Walter, you got any bicarbonate?
No, I'm sorry. Anything wrong?
That broken leg. The guy broke his leg.
What are you talking about?
About Dietrichsen. He had accident insurance, and then he broke his leg.
So what?
He didn't put in a claim. Why didn't he?
What the dickens are you driving at?
Walter, I ate dinner 2 hours ago. It's stuck halfway down. That little man is acting up again. There's something wrong with the Dietrichsen case.
Well, maybe Norton was right. Maybe it was suicide.
No, not suicide. But not an accident, either.
What else? Murder?
I'll tell you better when I've checked on his wife.
His wife?
She's the beneficiary.
Oh, that's crazy. You haven't got a thing to go on, Keyes.
No, not too much. 26 years experience, all the percentage, and this lump of concrete in my stomach. Say, I've got to get to a drugstore. I'll see you tomorrow. Can you imagine? No bicarbonate in the fridge.
Walter.
Be careful.
How much do you think he knows?
Oh, it's not what he knows. It's those stinking hunches of his. Baby, from here on in, we've got to really watch it. I knew you, Keyes. I knew how you worked. I felt like I was holding a time bomb in my hand without knowing what time it was set to go off.
Say, Walter, I picked up something today from Mrs. Dietrichsen's maid. She saw Mrs. D trying on a hat, a black hat like a widow might wear. Only it was a week before Dietrichsen died. Walter, I heard from Jackson today. You know, that fellow on the train, he sent back those pictures of Dietrichsen with an affidavit. He swears it isn't the man he talked to that night. Walter, it's coming apart at the seams. When I knew it wasn't Dietrichsen on the train, I knew that dame must have had some help. She's got a boyfriend, Walter. He's been dropping in there every night around 12. I'm going to pick them both up any time I want to.
It's funny, but that's the thing that hit me the hardest, Keyes. That boyfriend of hers. I'd killed a man. I'd killed him for money and for a woman. And now I wouldn't get the money and I wouldn't get the woman. All along, she'd been dealing with a crooked deck. I did a lot of thinking that afternoon. And then I knew what I had to do. That night, I called up Phyllis and said I was coming over. I told her to keep the lights off and to leave the door unlocked. I was all set now. Yeah, that's what I thought. What I didn't know was that she was set, too. And when I let myself into the house that night...
In here, Walter. The living room.
Hello, baby. Anyone else in the house?
No, we're all alone.
What's that music?
A radio up the street. Sit down, Walter.
Just like the first time I was here, isn't it? We were talking about automobile insurance. Only you were thinking about murder. And I was thinking about that anklet.
And what are you thinking about now?
I'm all through thinking, baby. This is goodbye.
Goodbye? Where are you going?
Nowhere. It's you that's going, baby.
So you've got it all arranged, Walter.
You arranged it for me. You and your boyfriend. It's been you and him all along, hasn't it?
That's not true.
Well, that's what Keyes thinks, and what Keyes thinks is good enough for me. It's simple when you figure it out. The boyfriend will be here in 15 minutes, with the cops right behind him. I fixed that. They'll just charge another one off to him.
Maybe I don't figure it that way.
Maybe I do. Say, I don't like that music anymore. It's too close. You mind if I shut this window?
Walter.
Yeah? So you cross me again. What's the matter? Why don't you finish me off? Maybe if I came a little closer. How's this? No, huh? All right, I'll take the gun. Why didn't you shoot again, baby?
Walter.
Don't tell me it's because you love me all this time.
No. No, I never loved you, Walter. Not you or anyone. Until a minute ago, I didn't think anything like that could ever happen to me.
Sorry, baby. I'm not buying.
I'm not asking you to buy. Just hold me close.
Sure. Sure. Goodbye, baby.
No! What?
Now I'm back here in the office, Keys. It's pretty late. Maybe they found her by now, but I had to make my report. I had to tell you all that.
It won't be necessary, Walter.
Hello, Keys. How long have you been standing there?
Long enough.
What happened? Your little man pull you out of bed?
No. The janitor. Seems you leaked a little blood on the way in here. You're all washed up, Walter.
Oh, no. Not yet, Keys. Look, you don't have to find this report till tomorrow morning. By then, I can be across the border.
You'd never make it.
Sure, I can. Sure, I can make it. If I started right now, that's all I'm asking, Keys. Just this one break. Just a chance to... A chance to...
Hello, headquarters. This is Barton Keys over at Pacific All Risk. Better send a couple of your boys over here. Yeah, they'd better bring an ambulance. A friend of mine just reached the end of the line.
Valley 103.1.
A Night to Remember. It stars Brian Donlevy as Jeffrey Troy and Lucille Ball as his wife Nancy.
The address was 39 Gay Street, New York. I had a strange feeling about the place right from the start. First the scream, and then...
Jeff, there's something crawling across the floor.
Gay Street, New York. You know, an artist might call that Greenwich Village. A social worker might call it the slums. Sure, I pointed all that out to Nancy, but she was sort of sensitive, I guess, because, you see, she'd rented the place without even asking me, and, well, anyway, you know how women are.
Now, Jeff, I've said it all before.
Many times, darling.
And I'll say it again. If you're going to write a novel about Greenwich Village, then
you ought to live in Greenwich Village.
You funny man.
Quite frankly, I didn't like number 39 Gay Street. I don't think you would have liked it either. One of those musty old brownstone fronts they'd cut up into small apartments. And when we went up the steps that night and entered the hall, our landlord wasn't exactly overjoyed to see
us. I wasn't expecting you, Mrs. Trier. And not till Thursday.
Well, I thought as long as the apartment was vacant. You see, my husband is a writer, and he's very anxious to get to work.
Yes, we'll be glad to pay you for the 3 extra days.
No, it isn't that. No. You see, I haven't had the lights turned on, and the apartment isn't cleaned yet. And, perhaps if you'd have stayed at a hotel tonight, by tomorrow I could have everything ready.
Oh, but our furniture's on the way from Connecticut. It ought to be here in an hour or so. I guess we'll just have to... Jeff, what was that?
Well, it wasn't the 6 o'clock whistle.
It came from downstairs.
Hey, Mrs. Troy, I assure you it's nothing at all.
Mr. Turner, it happened again.
Well, what happened?
Down in the basement, that thing, whatever it is, it crawled across my feet.
Stop that, Mrs. Salter. Stop it at once. Now, you go to my apartment and wait for me there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Say... What did she mean?
Oh, you mustn't mind her, Mr. Troy. She's my janitor, you see.
Oh.
An excellent worker, strong as an ox, but when she works in the basement, she gets hallucinations. That's absurd, isn't it?
Yeah, silly. Well, if you'll lend us some candles, Mr. Turner, we'll have a look at our little nest. Come along, Nancy. Let you and me go up, huh?
Jeff, It isn't up, it's down.
Well, then let's go down and see our little... Down?
I forgot to tell you, it's the basement apartment.
It didn't look so bad by candlelight. The living room was pretty fair size. One door opening on the street and another opening on the hall. And the bedroom had a door that opened right on a garden. That's what had Nancy so excited.
Oh, just imagine, darling, a garden right outside your bedroom in the heart of New York. Why, we can even have a victory garden.
Mm-hmm. Good soil, too. Lots of iron in it.
How do you know?
Well, isn't that a horseshoe lying there?
Jeff, you found the lucky piece. Pick it up.
Where'll I wear it?
You just hold it tight and make a wish.
Oh. Okay, I've made it.
What'd you wish?
Well, while we're waiting for our furniture, I wish we could find a restaurant where they still have some steaks. Cute name for a restaurant. Polly's Stable. Must be a good place to put on the feed bag.
You funny man.
Good evening, folks. How's everything?
Well, the martinis are swell, but I need some toast.
Toast? What kind? White or rye?
Oh, it doesn't matter. I just want to stick it under the leg of this table.
Look, Jeff, while you order dinner, I'll go and phone the cleaners about our drapes.
Well, I'm pretty hungry, Nancy. Will you be back soon?
Uh-huh, and 2 shakes of a dry martini.
Hey, listen, I've had about enough stalling. You meet me tonight or it's going to be curtains.
Gosh, that's in the next booth.
Yeah, let's meet the same place as before. 39 Gay Street, the basement apartment. You heard me. That's all.
39 Gay Street, the basement apartment. Oh, gee. Jeff, while I was in that telephone booth, I... Oh, excuse me, I didn't realize the waitress was still here.
She isn't the waitress. She owns the joint. Darling, meet Polly. Polly, meet Darling.
Hello, Darling.
How do you do?
Now, Nancy, you were saying...
Jeff, you see that man at the bar with the hair growing down his forehead and the scar on his chin?
Uh-huh.
Well, I heard him threatening someone in the next booth, telling him to meet him in our apartment.
Well, they couldn't meet in the telephone booth, so I guess if they want... Our apartment?
I distinctly heard him say 39 Gay Street, the basement apartment.
39 Gay Street?
Yes, do you know the place?
Oh, sure. I live there myself on the second floor.
Oh, you do? Well, then maybe you know
who that... Excuse me, we're awful busy tonight. See you later, folks. Enjoy your dinner.
Jeff, she acted so strangely. What's it all about?
Oh, I think I better find out. I'm going over and have a talk with that guy.
No, Jeff, don't.
Well, now you just wait there, Nancy. Hiya, pal.
I'm not your pal, and keep your hands to yourself.
Hey, just a minute. Who do you think you're shoving?
Don't like it, huh?
No.
Well, maybe you'll like this better.
Jeff! Jeff, darling, open your eyes. Speak to me.
Is that guy still here?
No. He's gone. He ran out.
Okay, honey. What'll we talk about?
My hero. Now you'll need two stakes, one for your stomach and one for your eye.
Huh? Home, sweet home. And there's no place on earth I'd rather not be.
Jeff, it's awfully dark in here.
Yeah, lucky we bought these extra candles. Well, there we are. That gives us some light.
But don't you understand? I left a candle lit when we went out to dinner.
Oh, well, it must have blown out. Any little draft could... Ouch!
What's the matter?
Oh, my foot. I stubbed my toe. Hey, look. It's that darn horseshoe. My lucky piece, no less.
That's odd. What's it doing on the floor you put on the windowsill?
Say, that's right. How did it get on the...
Jeff, listen, you hear that noise?
Sounds like water running in the bathroom. I'd better have a look, huh?
Hey, not without me.
All right. Here, put the candle down on the floor.
Right.
That's it. Steady now. You with me, Nancy? Nancy!
Jeff, look! That candle is moving.
Gosh.
Hey, what's so funny?
Look, it's a turtle. It must have come in from the garden. You put the candle right down on its back. Hey, I'll bet that's what's been scaring Mrs. Salter, too. Come on, now let's have a look at that bathroom. There you are, Nancy. You see? Just some water running out of the tub.
That's what I mean. Where'd the water come from?
Well,
we didn't fill that tub.
That's right, we didn't. Oh, I know. That guy from the restaurant came in here to take a bath, but he was very modest, so he blew out the candle. And he pitched horseshoes to dry himself off.
You funny man.
Oh, well, there's no use getting all upset, Nancy. What's that?
Maybe he's back again. Jeff, don't go.
Don't worry, I'm not.
Anybody home? Got a load of furniture here.
Oh, it's just the furniture.
Yeah. Imagine being scared by an overstuffed chair. It was quiet enough the rest of that night, but in the morning, things really started to happen. First of all, the police woke us up.
Sorry to get you folks out of bed, but the neighbors complain. Fella lying in your garden without any clothes.
In our garden? Well, he's got a nerve. Well, go on out there and get him out of there. Wake him up.
Well, I wish I could. He happens to be dead.
And then later, when they had us look at the corpse, Nancy had to go and blurt.
Why, Jeff! Jeff, it's the man you had a fight with in the restaurant last night.
Now, just let me get this straight, Mr. Troy, about this exchange of blows last night.
Inspector, there wasn't any exchange. Only two blows were struck. He struck my husband, and my husband struck the floor.
Oh, no, Nancy, I pushed him once, didn't I?
Now, what's one little push? You didn't murder him, did you?
Ooh, me?
Say, Inspector.
Yes, Balling?
I got a little dope for you. The guy's name was Kaufman, Lewis Kaufman. Had an apartment up on the third floor.
Who told you that?
Oh, you wouldn't guess in a million years. Remember during Prohibition, this place was a speakeasy? Joe's place, it was called. And Joe had a partner.
Eddie Turner.
Yeah, that's right. Remember, we grilled him, and when Joe disappeared, well, little Eddie's still around. In fact, he's a landlord of this joint.
That's interesting.
Inspector Hankins?
Yeah?
My name is Lingle. I have an apartment in this building.
That's right, Chief. I got his name on the list.
I want you to know, sir, if I can help in any way.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Lingle. We may call on you.
Well, I'm in the phone book. The Lingle Art Studios. Anytime at all, Inspector. Anytime at all.
Inspector, if you don't mind my putting in a word.
Not at all, Mr. Troy.
Well, I think you should have questioned him. After that conversation my wife overheard, you should question everyone in this house.
Mr. Troy, remember, you live here, too.
Well, that's silly. Jeff isn't the murderer's type.
Well, I didn't say he was. Come on, Balling, let's go up and look at Kaufman's apartment.
Wait a minute, Inspector. Just look at these books. Murder in the laundry, murder in the air, murder in the subway. Must be a couple of dozen of them. Somebody got murder on the brain.
Mr. Troy, you said you were a novelist? You didn't by chance,
You bet. I wrote every one of them. Murder Mysteries by Jeffrey Yort. That's my name spelled backwards. T-R-O-Y-Y-O-R-T.
You spell that backwards, too.
K-N-I-S-T-I-N...
Boy. Mr. Hankins, you're not a detective. You're a critic.
Well, I guess that made me pretty mad. Made me want to show the inspector up, so while Nancy was throwing some breakfast together, I sort of wandered through the halls looking for clues. That was how I ran into Polly, you know, the girl we met the night before. Well, one thing led to another, and then she asked me in to have some coffee, and that's when it happened. I noticed a letter lying on the coffee table, and quite casually, I read the address. To Mr. Andrew Brule, 507 West 12th. Only Polly seemed to get upset, and she made a grab for the letter, but I got it first, and just to tease her, you know, just for a gag. There we are, sort of wrestling for it, and I guess she has her arms around me when all of a sudden Nancy shows up.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, that's all right, sweet. We were just kidding around.
Yes, over this letter.
Well, yeah. When you get through playing post office, Mr. Troy, your breakfast is ready.
Say, I think she's mad.
I better go and explain. Nancy! Oh, Nancy, wait a minute.
You stay away from me, you bluebeard.
Oh, Nancy, you're not jealous, darling. That's silly.
You're never jealous, I suppose.
Of course I'm not.
How about when the butcher saved me that roast? You weren't jealous. Oh, no, just mad enough to kill, that's all.
Darling, shh.
I will not shh. You were mad enough to kill.
Say, Mr. Troy, I want to speak to you.
Oh, now look what you've done.
Let's go down to your apartment, folks. A few more questions I'd like to ask. Mr. Troy, did you ever see this horseshoe before?
Oh, sure. That's my lucky piece.
Wasn't so lucky for Lewis Kaufman.
What do you mean?
I mean there's dried blood on it. And these strands of hair are from the dead man's head.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that this horseshoe was the murder weapon?
Now you're getting hot, and I do mean hot.
Oh, say, Chief, we checked the fingerprints on that horseshoe. They're his, all right.
Whose?
Yours.
Oh.
Okay, Troy, get your hat and coat.
Wait a minute, he hasn't done anything. He wouldn't hurt a fly. Jeff, darling, don't go. You haven't even had your breakfast.
That's all right, baby, don't you worry. I had a cup of coffee upstairs with Polly.
Oh, with Polly. Take him along, Inspector, and I hope he gets light.
Well, they kept me down at headquarters all that day. But then some new development turns up, so that evening they let me go. Nothing else happened till late that night. I guess I must have been sleeping pretty soundly when...
Jeff! Jeff, wake up!
What's the matter now?
There's somebody in this apartment. I can hear him walking around.
Well, tell him to sit down.
In this apartment?
Shh! Hear that sound?
I wish I didn't.
Don't go out there. You might get killed.
Yeah, I know. But if I just stay here and listen, I'll die of fright.
Your golf bag is standing here in the corner.
Huh?
Maybe you can hit him with a golf club.
I don't know. I could never hit a ball. Oh, well, we'll try it. Come on.
There he is, Jeff.
Huh?
I can see him outlined against the window.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Don't move now. I've got you.
Oh, Jeff. Sure, you got him, only he didn't know about it. Now he's gone.
This is no time to argue, Nancy. Turn on the light.
Okay.
Hey, Nancy, look. He dropped his knife.
And knocked over the screen. If men weren't so clumsy, they'd...
Say, honey, this isn't our screen.
I know. Mr. Turner lent it to me to cover the window till our drapes got back.
Well, there must be something about this screen that... Sure. There it is. He was scraping something off with that knife. See it, Nancy? Something 07 West 12th Street.
That first number looks like it might be a 5.
507 West 12th. Hey, that sounds familiar. I wonder where I... Wait a minute. I know. 507 West 12th. That was what was on Polly's letter.
The one she had to wrestle you for?
And the name was Brule, Andrew Brule. And somebody didn't want us to know it.
Well, it wasn't Polly. It was a man.
Yeah, and it wasn't Turner. He's not that big.
Listen, who's that?
Why don't you ask?
Yes? Who's there?
It's me, Mr. Lingle. I heard a noise. I thought there might be some trouble. Can I be of any help?
Well, if you find a stray heart in your throat, it's mine.
It's all right, Mr. Lingle. Everything's under control. Thank you.
Oh, that's fine. Good night.
Such a nice man, always wanting to help.
Well, that doesn't answer the question of Mr. Brule. Say, Nancy, call me a cab, will you? I'm going in and put some clothes on.
Jeff, it's after 1 o'clock.
Well, if Mr. Brule is a respectable guy, he'll be home and asleep, and I'm going to wake him up.
Oh, that's swell, except for one slight mistake.
Mistake?
Yes. We're going to wake him up.
Yes, what is it?
Oh, good evening, madam. I'm sorry to disturb you, but it's very urgent that I see Mr. Brule.
Ain't no Mr. Brule here, and it ain't evening, it's morning, and you ought to be ashamed. Good night.
Hmm, cute kid.
Jeff, are you sure you had the right address?
Absolutely positive. You know, Nancy, it's funny. His mail should be sent to a place where he doesn't even live. I think we ought to check with the post office, you know it?
Darling, not tonight.
Well, no, I guess it can wait till morning.
Here's the clerk now. Go ahead, Jeff. Ask him.
My name is Brule. Andrew Brule, 507 West 12th. I haven't been getting my mail lately. Would you please check and see if there's something wrong?
Mr. Brule, you gave us instructions over a year ago to hold all mail and general delivery. Don't you remember?
Oh, he's so absent-minded.
Well, is that so?
He sometimes even forgets he's married.
Well, that certainly clears things up for me.
It does?
Mr. Brule, I guess you just forgot. You called up here about an hour ago.
I did?
Surely. You asked if anyone had tried to pick up your mail. Sounded kind of worried, too.
Oh, he's just the worrying type. Come along, dear. There are others waiting. Come on.
Yes. Thanks, old man. Much obliged.
Not at all, Mr. Brule. Don't mention it.
Jeff, what do you think?
I think Mr. Brule is worrying, too. It's pretty clear now, Nancy. He's mixed up in this murder some way, and he knows that we've gotten a line on him. Well, the next thing, I guess he'll come after us.
Jeff, what do we do?
What can we do? Just sit tight and wait. And when he comes, we'll grab him.
Jeff, what time is it now?
Oh, just a few minutes to midnight.
Midnight?
Say, what are you so scared about? We've got all the lights on. I've got my trusty mid-iron here, and... Hey, the lights. Who turned those lights off?
Not me.
Huh? It must have been the murderer. The fuse box is out there in the hall.
Jeff, there's something coming through the door.
Steady now. Steady, Nancy. Yeah. All right, you, whoever you are, you better give up. I got you covered.
Jeff!
I've got him!
Jeff!
Nancy, I got him! Give me a hand, will you?
Jeff!
Sock him with something, Nancy!
Yeah.
A chair, anything!
I'm coming, Jeff!
Hit him, Nancy!
I'll help you, darling! There! Take that, you nasty man! I'll teach you to hurt, Jeff! I'll teach you to...
Hey. What hit me?
Oh, Jeff, it's you. Oh, darling, I'm sorry. It's so dark in here. Well,
maybe it is, but I can see stars. Hey, the murderer. Where'd he go?
I don't know. That was a door, Jeff. He must have gone out.
Hey, listen. Police whistles. How did the cops get here?
How do you think? I called them this afternoon.
Oh, look, there. The lights are on again.
They must have fixed the fuse.
Say, did you call the cops or the electricians?
Nice work, Mr. Troy. We nabbed him, all right.
Yeah? Who was it, Inspector?
Mr. Andrew Brule, alias Mr. Lingle.
Mr. Lingle? Who lives upstairs? The one who wanted to help?
Oh, that was a front. Like his art studios were just a front for his blackmailing.
Blackmailing?
Sure. He was collecting from every person in this house, and they didn't know that Brule and Lingle were one and the same.
But how could he blackmail all these people?
Oh, easy enough. Just get something on them that might embarrass them. Funny, the things that people will try to hide. Since he only spoke over the phone to them, they never guessed who he was.
Yeah, but what about Kaufman? Why was he killed?
Well, I guess Kaufman was the only one who suspected the truth. And when he insisted on having a showdown, Lingle had to kill him to keep him quiet.
Well, I guess that's that case, Inspector. I sure am glad I was in on the finish.
Finish is right, Mr. Troy. Only it might have been yours.
Huh?
We just took this knife off Lingle. Pretty mean-looking, isn't it?
Mean? He was going to...
Mrs. Troy, he's fainted.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Jeff, open your eyes. Darling, get up. Please get up. You've got to get up, Jeff. You got your good suit on.
It seems that every housewife has a weakness. Now, some just can't make good biscuits. Others can't iron their husband's shirts properly. But Gracie has the worst weakness of all. She can't say no to a house-to-house salesman. Whatever he has to sell, Gracie will buy it. Now, a typical day after George has gone to the office runs something like this. First comes a magazine salesman.
Yes?
How do you do, madam? Is your husband a sport lover?
Well, yes and no. He's a pretty good sport, but he's not much of a...
I mean, does he hunt and fish?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Good. I'm selling Field and Stream.
Well, we wouldn't have room for a field, but I'll take a stream.
Field and Stream is a magazine.
Oh, well, I'm sure my husband will like that. I'll take a 20-year subscription.
Is that your husband's picture on the piano?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I suggest you give him a 1-year subscription and renew it if necessary.
Next comes a salesman from a nursery.
How do you do? I'm selling flowers and shrubbery.
Oh, I can't be fooled twice. I'll take a 1-year subscription.
But, madam, I'm from a nursery.
Oh, a nursery.
Yes.
Well, I'll take one baby boy and one baby girl.
Next comes a man selling insect spray.
Yes?
Good morning, madam. Do you have Japanese beetles, aphids, termites, or silverfish?
Well, no, I don't. I'll take a dozen of each.
Yes, anyone who comes to Gracie's door finds a willing buyer. In fact, one day...
How do you do?
Well, how do you do?
I'm making a house-to-house canvas.
Well, if it's a nice, heavy canvas, I'll buy.
The canvas is for the Gallup pool.
All right. I'll take one pole for the backyard and one for the front.
Poor Gracie. She just cannot say no. George has tried his best to correct her weakness.
Gracie, I want you to learn how to say no to salesmen. Whatever they say, you answer no.
Mm-hmm. All right, then.
Let's see you say it.
No.
Try it again.
No.
Now, the next time a salesman comes to the door, that's the only word I want you to speak.
No.
Right.
Good day, madam. Have you a concert grand piano?
No.
Would one be too expensive for you?
No.
Do you think your husband would object if you bought one?
No.
Well, splendid. I see you're both music lovers. Would one piano be enough?
No.
Ah, you'll take one apiece. Excellent. Will tomorrow be soon enough for delivery?
No.
This afternoon, then. Would you like the easy credit terms?
No.
That'll be COD $4,000. Good day.
Business, 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 business.
There's no business like show business, like no business I know.
No business like it, everything about it is appealing.
Why, it's grand.
Everything the traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling.
You're a smash.
When you are stealing that extra bow.
There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low.
Even with a turkey that you know will fold,
you may be stranded out in the cold.
Still you wouldn't change it for a stack of gold. Let's go on with the show.
The butcher and the baker and the grocer and the clerk
are secretly unhappy men because
the butcher and the baker and the grocer and the clerk
get paid for what they do but no applause.
They'd gladly bid their dreary jobs goodbye for anything theatrical and why.
Because there's no business like show business, like no business I know.
You get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. On top of that, your pa and ma have parted. You're brokenhearted, but you go on.
Good boy. There's no people like show people. They don't run out of dough.
Yesterday they told you you would not go far.
That night you open and there you are.
Next day on your dressing room they've hung a star. Let's go on with the show. Show people they smile when they are low, 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 low.
Angels come from everywhere with lots of jack.
And when you lose it, there's no attack.
Where could you get money that you don't give back?
Let's go on with the show right now. Let's go on with the show.
About this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
And you are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 103.1, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.